Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 124, So Much for Science, Sunday, June 12th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This episode features the following segments: On the Porch, Ever Expanding Skill Set, Sheep to Shawl, Off the Shelf, Chin Wagon, and there's a very special giveaway that I announce at the end of the episode. This episode has quite a bit of content, but it is light in the knitting department because June can be kind of a whirlwind for educators, and this June I have not been an exception to that. I'm still working on two knitting projects that I've talked about in the past. One is the Agatha socks. I have enjoyed knitting on these socks, and I have determined that they are for a Christmas present for my mother. So I need to get her foot measurements because we do not have the same size foot. And she has been doing a lot of traveling, and she's been very busy. So the socks are currently on hold. I am nearly completed with the first sock, and I will cast on the second sock immediately after I get her foot measurements. The other project that has been on my needles for a while and which I hope to complete by the end of June is paper cranes. This is a shawl pattern. It's an elongated and asymmetrical shawl with some substantial ribbing on all sides, which I think will make it wear well and sit nicely around the shoulders. It is a pattern by Lori Versace of Versace Knits. I'm knitting it on size 4 needles in Swan's Island Light Fingering. This yarn is naturally dyed with indigo. It is still bleeding onto my hands despite repeated rinses. But nevertheless, I am enjoying the knitting because it's quite easy to do in a lot of different situations. And being that the pattern calls for 1,000 yards of this yarn, it's quite an investment of a project in terms of yarn and time. Most of the knitting is stockinette, so it's knitting and purling. Then there are increases every 6 rows so that you get the asymmetrical shape of the shawl. And then the other feature of this pattern is the make paper crane direction, which directs you to make a small hole in the fabric of the shawl. And these holes become more and more frequent as the knitting continues. They're made to imitate a flock of cranes taking off into the sky. It's simple and elegant, and I think that the knitting is quite meditative. It requires you to pay just enough attention. So I am really enjoying it, and after a rather slow start, I am making quite a bit of progress on it now. Ever expanding skill set. For hashtag Power Pantry during the month of June, we are cooking with coconut in all varieties. In preparation for this month's experiments, I did a bit of shopping. I was out of coconut oil, so I purchased some coconut oil that is good for high heat cooking. I think it says 350 to 450 degrees. And I've been using this oil in place of olive oil in some of my recipes. I also purchased some coconut flour, and I have not used it in any recipes yet, but in doing a bit of research about coconut flour, I found that it is not advisable to substitute coconut flour for whole wheat flour or really any other kind of flour in a recipe without thinking about your quantities of liquid, because coconut flour absorbs liquid very quickly, and a recipe with coconut flour will need a lot more liquid in order for it to be moist and delicious rather than dry. There's a recipe for a cake. Many recipes calling for coconut flour are for gluten-free types of cakes and pastries because coconut flour is gluten-free. However, these recipes often have many, many, many eggs in order to create the bulk and the texture that folks are used to when they're eating pastries. So there was a cake recipe that called for a dozen eggs in the cake. I was thinking that I might try some recipes from my usual repertoire, but substitute maybe half a cup of the flour for coconut flour, and then adding an egg or two to the recipe and just seeing what happens. I think for something that's not very sophisticated, like a quick bread, that could be a good idea. I linked to a few recipes that I tried this past week in the show notes. One is an excellent recipe for coconut quick bread, which has a bunch of dried coconut, and you could even try toasted coconut or put some toasted coconut on the top of the bread. I didn't get very fancy with my recipe. I just was interested in the grated lime that was in the recipe because I thought the lime coconut would be great for warm weather snacking or coconut quick bread as a breakfast food. So I linked that recipe. The other thing I tried was sort of a riff on a recipe that I saw online when I was thinking about, oh, what am I going to make for dinner tonight? I really want to try grilling, and I have never grilled tofu before. So I thought I would give it a try. I marinated slices of tofu, of firm tofu. Next time I might go with extra firm. I marinated them in some coconut milk, soy sauce, and grated ginger. And then I just put a sheet of heavy-duty foil on the top of the grill, and onto that foil I put a pretty generous layer of the high-heat coconut oil. And that prevented sticking for the most part. I found that when I wanted to flip the tofu, it was best to remove the entire piece of foil from the grill and then use a very thin bladed spatula to get under the tofu and flip it over. Even though there was foil on the grill, there were grill marks on the tofu, which I wasn't expecting. So I thought that was great and gave it an authentic look. And then the tofu took on some of the smoky quality from the fire in our big green egg. It's definitely something I will try again, and maybe with some other ingredients as a marinade, and a longer time marinating the tofu, maybe overnight in the refrigerator as opposed to just 20 minutes while I was preparing the rest of the meal. Along with this grilled tofu, I served a rice that was cooked in coconut milk with flaked coconut and almonds, so it was kind of like a coconut rice pilaf. And then a whole bunch of sautéed fresh vegetables. One of the things I'm trying this summer is to grow some Swiss chard along with some of the herbs and flowers that I have in my potted garden. We have a potted garden because we have very little sunlight, and it's a great way to kind of contain some plants and get them in a spot where there's a bit more sunlight. It also helps me move them around a little bit to catch some sun. And I have been harvesting Swiss chard every few days and throwing a handful into whatever I happen to be cooking. One excellent tip that I learned from a chef friend is for a glaze that makes almost anything super delicious. All you do is combine equal parts coconut oil, a high quality mustard, and maple syrup, and you melt them together to create a glaze. In terms of the coconut oil, for this recipe, I would choose a low temperature coconut oil that actually has a great deal of coconut flavor in it. What I noticed about the high heat coconut oil is that it's only faintly reminiscent of coconut flavor. You really don't taste it. So use the low heat variety of coconut oil, mustard, and maple syrup. What you get is a glaze that really doesn't taste like any one of those things, but is just sort of creamy and spicy and tart and smooth. It's just a fantastic combination. And my favorite way to serve this is over roasted Brussels sprouts in the fall. But it's also good on roasted carrots. I think you could try it over fish as well, maybe a grilled fish. And you can experiment with adding some additional flavors. But those three, that trio, is really enough to create something interesting. And I always get the comment from guests, what's in this? What is this taste? So it's definitely something that awakens the palate and gets people's interest. Sheep to Shawl. Last Saturday was the final meeting of our Sheep to Shawl course before a 2-month summer hiatus. We don't meet during the months of July or August. So we were trying to cram in everything important we wanted to do and talk about during our June session of the Sheep to Shawl course. The day included a trip to the Dye Garden, which is just a short walk from Fibercraft Studio. And all of this is on the beautiful Waldorf campus in Chestnut Ridge, New York. We picked a variety of different plants in the garden and looked at others. Our teachers helped us identify plants and the parts of the plant that could be harvested and used for dyeing. And then we spent quite a bit of time making some dye pots. Our first dyeing session consisted of making dye jars and sun dyeing, but making a dye pot is a much more effective way of dyeing yarn, and you can do a greater quantity. Also, you don't have to worry about the plant material mixing in with your yarn or fiber. When you create a dye jar, your yarn just kind of mingles with the plant material, and it can be quite a chore to get all of that cleaned out. When you make a dye pot, you make a solution and you strain it. And then often, if the plant material will still yield additional color, we create kind of a tea bag out of it and put it back into the pot. So we created some dye baths, and while they were simmering or soaking or sitting, we used some mordants to prep the fiber that we were about to dye. The typical mordant that's used for most plant dyeing is an alum mordant. You use alum and also just a bit of cream of tartar to soften the solution a little bit, because alum tends to be incredibly harsh. I had brought along my rhubarb mordant, which I was very eager to try, and a couple folks were daring and put their yarn and fiber into the rhubarb mordant. I had made this during the month of May when we were experimenting with rhubarb. I picked a bunch of rhubarb from my mother's garden, and then use the tops, which have oxalic acid, which is a bit toxic, and use them to prepare a mordant out of doors. It's very important to have great ventilation when you're dealing with a rhubarb mordant. So I had well over a pound of rhubarb tops, and they sat on my porch for a couple of days before I was able to get to them. And then I just submerged them into clean filtered water, brought the pot up to a simmer, let it simmer for about 10 minutes on the top of my grill, and then I closed the heat off, but then closed the grill so it would remain warm for at least an hour. And then I was just super busy and didn't get to the dye pot, the mordant pot. So the rhubarb tops sat in that water for several days before I strained them off. I got a rather brown liquid that has, I didn't put my face super close to it to inhale because it's supposed to be toxic, but in working with the mordant, it does have a really pleasant vegetal smell. And my teachers remarked on that too. Wow, that smells nice. And I said, well, don't get too close. Remember, it's not so good to breathe it in. The yarn that I put into the mordant came out with a little bit of a brownish yellow tint to it. So this mordant could be used as a dye to get a very subtle, gentle color. But I wanted to be scientific about my dyeing. One of the things that I set out as a goal for myself in retaking this sheep to shawl course, because this is my second cycle in the course, is to think more intently and be more purposeful in my methods with the course this year. And so rather than just haphazard putting yarn into different dye baths, I had created 4 skeins of hand-spun yarn, and this was all in the lightest variety of Jacob wool that I could find. Jacob has a number of color gradations, but for this portion, I used a white or very pale color fiber. I spindle spun all of the singles, and then I plied them using my Louette wheel. And then I had 4 skeins of approximately 40 yards each. So I put 2 skeins into the alum mordant and 2 skeins into the rhubarb mordant. Then when we had created the dye baths, I selected 2 different dye baths and I put 1 of each mordant into those dye baths. So I had an alum and a rhubarb skein in a madder pot, which yields like a pinky red color. And then I had an alum and a rhubarb skein into a weld pot. And that yields a very bright electric yellow sort of color. After about an hour toward the end of the day, when we were all collecting our yarn from the pots and admiring the colors, I went to the weld pot and I pulled out my skeins. And I went to the madder pot and I pulled out 1 skein. My rhubarb mordanted skein for the madder pot just went missing. Everyone looked through their yarn. Everyone looked all over the studio. Everyone looked in all of the other dye pots. Missing skein. So much for science. I don't know. Maybe that will turn up in September. Maybe someone will have discovered it among their yarn and fiber when they are sorting things out over the summer. I don't know. But the difference I noted between the 2 skeins that went into the weld pot are that the alum definitely yielded a brighter, whiter version of the color, and that the rhubarb mordanted skein yielded a more brownish, muted variety of that color. Also pleasant, but certainly different. You could tell that the two were different. And like I said, they were different colors just from the mordant, even before they went into the dye pot. So even though the experiment is not complete, because I don't know what that second matter skein would look like, I'm hoping it would be like a little more deep or a little more purple in color, perhaps. Maybe the world will never know. Maybe I'll find out in September. But I have additional rhubarb mordant to keep trying this summer. And I am working on a list of different types of natural dyes that I would like to try. I would also like to try using an iron or a copper mordant to alter the color of some naturally dyed yarn, or maybe using it as an after bath to change the color of a skein once I dye it initially. And everyone seems to be dyeing with indigo these days, so of course that's a fascination for me as well. I did bring home some plants from Fibercraft Studio. They have an annual plant sale, and I left with quite a few plants of indigo so I can try my own indigo leaf dyeing experiment again this year. Hopefully I will not have a broken jar and I will have greater success than I did last year. And I also purchased some Dyer's Coreopsis. This is a yellow orange flower that is most intense if you save the flowers, dry them, and then use them in a dye bath later on. They are planted in the very sunniest part of one of my gardens, and I am tending to them every day and just checking their progress and hoping that those plants will be successful this summer. Off the shelf. The Eat Your Words read-along is underway since June 1st, and it continues through the month of August. So all season long, you're invited to select a work of food writing. This could be food-related fiction, food journalism. Food memoir is a genre that's been getting a lot of attention. There are a lot of new titles out there and a lot of old favorites as well. So choose a work and read at your own pace. Read one work, read several, and join in the conversation on the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry. We have one thread dedicated to the read-along. There's also a page with a list of all of the reading suggestions. I've been compiling them for months and months. The thread contains many film suggestions as well. I did not list those on a page, but if you go through the thread, you'll find excellent suggestions for food-related films. All summer long, we will be chatting, and there's a chance to win some fantastic prizes. So I need to do some chin wagging about some of the lovely sponsors of our summer read-along. One prize will be awarded each month, and the winner will be a randomly selected person who has made a post in the Eat Your Words read-along thread. June's prize is a skein of yarn that has been donated by Carol of Foster Sheep Farm. She has a farm, and she also has a complete full-service yarn shop. Carol's shop is in Schuylerville, New York, and if you are interested in some of her products but you can't make it to Schuylerville, you can contact her and she can arrange shipment. In addition to commercially dyed yarns, she also has a line of her own kettle-dyed yarns from Romney and Wensleydale sheep on her farm, and she carries other yarn from local farmers as well, and dyers. Carol gave me a skein of superwash yarn that's American superwash. She had dyed it herself, and I'm calling this colorway creamsicle, because there are portions of undyed yarn and some beautiful orange. It's a sport weight yarn. I think it would be a lot of fun for summer knitting or even into the autumn because of the colors. And that prize will be awarded at the end of June. July's prize has been donated by Joanna Spring of the Knit Spin Farm podcast and also Etsy shop. Joanna has some beautiful products that she creates from her own farm, and she also sells prints, note cards, calendars of photographs that she takes of the animals on her farm. They are just as charming and charismatic as Joanna is, and she has donated a set of note cards to our July winner. Joanna also has a shop update coming up on June 23rd, so you can check out her products. I've linked to all of these proprietors, and I've posted photographs where relevant in the show notes and on the Ravelry thread as well. The third prize for August will be a $25 gift card from the newly opened Woolly Thistle. This is an Etsy shop, and the proprietor is Claire of the New Hampshire Knits podcast. So Claire has generously donated this $25 gift card, and I have a very special announcement about a giveaway that's happening now. So let me tell you a little bit about Claire's shop, the Woolly Thistle. It's not just any online retailer. Claire, who is Scottish, opened her doors in April with wool from the West Yorkshire Spinners. And she just received her latest shipment of British yarn, this time coming direct from Blacker in Cornwall, England. I'm sure you've heard about the beautiful Tamar Luster wool. This line comes in DK weight as well as fingering weight, and it's the latest offering of Blacker yarns. You'll also find in her shop unique blends such as Hebridean and mohair for nylon-free socks. Some of you are interested in knitting nylon-free socks and other hardware garments, and West Country tweed in DK. Let the Woolly Thistle deal with international shipping so you don't have to. In celebration of this latest shipment to the Woolly Thistle and also to promote her online shop, Claire has sent me a skein of the beautiful 4-ply fingering weight Tamar yarn. And it's in this lovely green color called Laren. She sent this along with the order I placed, because when she said she was getting in this yarn, and after having listened to everyone who attended the Edinburgh Yarn Festival and all of the excitement about this luster yarn, I really wanted to try some. And I knew exactly the pattern that I wanted to try. So I ordered from Claire 2 skeins of the DK weight in the colorway Valency, which is, it's almost indistinguishable between a gray and a purple. I think the luster of the luster yarn is incredibly noticeable in this Valency colorway, because in the light it can have a bit of a purple sheen to it. And in the shadows, it just looks like a really rich gray color. But I will be using it to knit the Selkie Hat and Mitts set designed by Bristol Ivy and which appears in a recent issue of Taproot magazine. I haven't tried any of the knitting projects in Taproot yet, and this Selkie Hat and Mitts set looks absolutely beautiful. So I thought that the Tamar yarn would be a great choice for the project and a great way to try it out. So this set I'm intending for a gift, a holiday gift, and it will be part of my plan for summer knitting. If you would like to win a skein of the Tamar fingering weight in Laren, which, as I mentioned, is a beautiful, soft, verdant green color, then you should head to the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry. And there's a giveaway thread. You can take a look at the products in Claire's shop and mention something about what's your favorite, or maybe even some suggestions from across the pond, something you would like to see her carry. I'm sure she would be interested in those types of suggestions as well. She also has some beautiful ribbon in her shop, and she carries Hayahaya needles as well. So make a post about what you like or what you would like to see, and I will be announcing the randomly selected winner on episode 126 of the podcast. This is episode 124, so it will be at least 2 weeks before I announce that winner. It could be more, just depending on my recording schedule. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up for today's episode. It is a gorgeous, breezy, sunny summer day here in Delaware Water Gap, and I'm really looking forward to getting out into the sunshine. My own participation in the Eat Your Words read-along has been pretty dismal, so I think this afternoon I would like to dig out my sun chair and my sun hat and just spend some time lounging around and doing a bit of reading, and then maybe later working on some spinning or some fiber prep on the porch. I hope you have an equally enjoyable day planned, and that you're enjoying the season wherever you are. Thanks for listening.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or liking the show's Facebook page, or joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry. The music for the episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Nature's a forget you high till your face is mine. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.